In the past 400 years, we have seen tremendous changes in the foods that people eat, in the ways they cook them, and in the equipment they cook them with. If we focus on lower income and middle lower income people in Great Britain and North America, we see that they're cooking in a very simple manner over an open fire, and they're eating the same foods day after day. They're using simple equipment and basic ingredients that are specific to their region. And that really affects the culture, what the people are like. In the book Albion Seed, the author points to four main cultural groups that come out of Great Britain and settle in North America. The people in East Anglia, folks from Southern England, from the North Midlands, and from the northern border regions. They come in each with their own cultural ideas about the foods they eat and how they cook them. Very different, even though these groups are not very far apart. It's very interesting to see how these food ways affect what happens in North America. We see a completely different way of cooking foods and the types of foods they eat in, say, New England versus Virginia, or Pennsylvania, or the backcountry. Now, each one of these cultures in this early time period is using the same kind of simple open hearth to cook in. Now, this is a progression from the much, much earlier hearth that was in the center of your room. In hundreds of years earlier, your typical kitchen was just in the main room of the house. And in the center of that room was basically a campfire. And the only way you could cook was extending pots over this fire or using simple cooking implements right beside it. The smoke went straight up to the ceiling and slowly leaked out through the roof. After a while, we get to the progression of the classic fireplace. And the best fireplace, the best cooking fireplace in the 17th and 18th century time period is a huge walk-in fireplace. Imagine a fireplace that is 6 feet wide or 8 feet wide and certainly tall enough that you can crouch and get into it. There are even fireplaces in that time period with seats inside of them. It was like a room in and of itself. And this was like a giant oven. You can imagine how smoky and how hot your kitchen was if you had to cook on a fireplace like that. So imagine that's your stove in your kitchen. You have this huge open fireplace. How are you going to cook within it? You don't have burners. You don't have an oven per se. So everything has to be cooked in pots that hang from your crane or your poles that go across the top of the fire, or you've got simple trivets that you can put into the fire that hold your pots and pans on top of them. Now, this idea that we have such simplistic equipment changes exactly what we can cook. It makes it so that things like stews or roasts are the main item that you're going to cook. It's interesting that we still have different cultures and different cultural foods going on, even though their equipment is very similar. In places in southern England, frying was more important. If we go to East Anglia, then we have more boiled foods. If we go up into the northern Midlands, yes, we've got a different kind of food that's more popular there. So not everything about their food was affected exactly by their equipment. Sometimes the food ways are affected by the kinds of grains that are available to them, or the meats that are available to them, or even sometimes their philosophical ideas about what's important about food. Some people are very, very interested in their food being rich and being a wonderful experience in eating, and others are shunning the concept of enjoying their food too much, that would be a distraction from what they should be doing. So how do we go from a kitchen with this huge open fireplace, these heavy pots and pans, chains and hooks and trivets, to the kitchen that we have today? That's an amazing progression, isn't it? The question is, why did it change? Most of that is that drive for the affluent foods. People that are in that lower and middle income group really want to have rich foods. And the reality is that even hundreds of years before that, the richest people, let's say the kings, they had kitchens that were amazing technological marvels. They had the complex kitchens, areas that were just set aside for pastries, and ways to just roast meats, and special ovens, and special cook stoves for amazing complicated meals. One of the developments that happens in Northern Europe is the raised hearth. And that happens because of the lack of fuel. Firewood becomes very difficult to get. And so you need to cook with very small fires, fires you're using just little sticks or whatever you have available. We can tend it constantly, and we have a smoke hood right above us. This kind of cooking surface was still in use in Europe until the middle of the 20th century. It was a very simple way of getting our fire close to us, and we would be able to cook different types of things. This cooking surface changes the kinds of foods that are available to us. While the raised hearth allows us to use less fuel, it also gives us much more control and allows us to cook more complicated foods. The next innovation is one that is related to this, and that is the stew stove. We see stew stoves showing up in something as early as Roman cookery. These stew stoves were a masonry construction along the wall, sometimes with a window right behind it to carry away the smoke. And it would have this raised hearth surface, but in the center of the raised hearth surface, there is a hole, usually 6 or 8 inches square. And this hole would go down into the masonry, and then there would be an air hole that would come in through the side. There would be a metal basket that's suspended below the surface so that you could put charcoal or small wood fire underneath that. Now, this stew stove would allow you to have a very controlled fire. It would also make it so that you could make it almost smokeless if you're using something like charcoal. And you could control that heat a lot, something like a hob or a burner on our stove today. Now, when we started to use something like a stew stove, that allowed completely different cooking vessels. Then we get something like a saucepan that has no legs, and we get much, much thinner material because we have a smaller controlled fire. That makes it so that you can create those very complex cullis-like sauces and different sorts of cooking that you need to watch for a particular moment in time and things that you need to stir constantly. If you need to stir something over these big open fires, you would burn up. They were very dangerous to use. But with a stew stove, you could be right there constantly tending your cooking all the while. One of the best examples we have of stew stove here in North America is what's happening at Monticello. Thomas Jefferson comes back from France, and he wants to bring that French cooking to North America, and he brings in that concept of a stew stove right there into his kitchen. Baking is very important to some of these cultures, and baking can be very difficult if you don't have a huge, expensive oven. So some of these cultures early on, when they didn't have an oven, would use one of their thick cast iron pots and cover that over on a heated hearth to do simple baking. But ovens are so important, and we want to have a real oven in our kitchen. So in the 18th century, we had ovens that were sometimes built into the wall of our huge hearth. And these were just simple, basically brick boxes, which we would build the fire in. And when it got up to heat, we would scrape the fire out and close the door with our bread or whatever was being baked inside of it. These ovens were so utterly simple, but still fairly expensive. In some of these cultures, we also had a common outdoor oven, which would be made with mud like we've done on the channel before. And these were much less expensive, but they were much more delicate also. They wouldn't last as long. But what we really want is to bring that oven inside the house and make it much more small and controllable. These ovens could vary in size a great deal, depending on whether it's just for a small household or a giant oven for a larger community. As ovens become more and more available, it changes the diet and the food of people and how they cook it. One great example of that is the disappearance of the boiled pudding. Early on, when you had nothing but a big pot to boil in, puddings were done inside of a cloth bag, and you would just boil it for hours and hours at a time. But as ovens became available, you see more and more baked puddings. And it's almost sometimes exactly the same recipe. It's just baked in the oven in a dish instead of boiled in a bag. If we don't have a regular oven, we have oven techniques that we can use. We can use the bake kettle, which is a cast iron implement that we can have fire underneath and on top. Or we have simple reflector ovens that we can use in our open fireplace and get an oven-like result. There are tremendous innovations that happened between 1740 and 1850 that really change what's happening in the kitchen and how we cook. And that's the development of the cast iron stove. We start to see that in the 1740s with something like the Franklin stove. Now, the Franklin stove was a cast iron fireplace, not really meant for cooking at all, but it's that start of the idea that we don't need to have a huge masonry implement on the side of our wall. It makes it so that we can bring the fire out into the room, heat is happening all around it, and the smoke is taken away through a metal pipe out through the ceiling. Now, that doesn't just take off crazy in the 18th century, but it's the start of that concept. And we also have developments of cast iron work happening in Great Britain in the 1780s, where they have to change from regular firewood to coal. And that changes what's happening with the hearth altogether. We need grates and different ways to hold that coal so it will burn properly. But at the same time, they start to develop things like little ovens off to the side. Now that starts a chain reaction. As we go into the 19th century, we start to see what we would think of as the cast iron wood stove being developed in North America. We have hundreds of patents happening at the time and a slow incremental development that turns into the cast iron wood stove that we know of today. If we look at a Currier and Ives print of a kitchen in the 1850s or 1860s, we see something like an Oberlin stove or any of those classic stoves we see in the Sears catalog from the late 19th century or early 20th century, those cast iron stoves are that direct descendant of the concept of the Franklin stove moving into the kitchen. Now this changes everything. It moves that fire into a cast iron box. It's much more controllable. It also makes it so that we can have burners on the top and an oven on the side. Even on some of these later stoves, we have a water jacket on the back so they can heat water for washing or whatever we need to do. This is changing the kitchen completely. It makes it much less cozy, but it makes it much less smoky and much less dangerous at the same time. Even in this circumstance, we don't have as much control as we want, and the fuel is disappearing. Things like coal or especially firewood become less and less available in some areas. So in the early 19th century, 1802 or so, we have the thought of maybe we can have a gas stove. And gas stoves start to be developed in that time period and really come into fruition much later in the 19th century. But that gives you much more precise control and much less smoke. And then in the early 20th century, even electric stoves come into play. Again, these are developed right out of that same cast iron stove and they emulate that. All throughout this process, what we've been doing is getting rid of the heat and getting rid of the smoke so that we can get right up there and cook and our food isn't affected by the fuel itself so that we don't have the taste of wood smoke in every single thing we cook. And that's one of these huge differences. Imagine living in that house in 1700 and you have this huge open fireplace and smoke is in your life every moment. It's in your clothes, it's in your bedding, and it's in every single dish that you cook. As we move through this time period, that smoke disappears more and more from the house. They get more able to take it out of the house and separate it from the food and from everything else in our life. So that by the time we get to that early 20th century, smoke is all but disappeared. Isn't it interesting that even today, some of us still desire that smoke in our food, and we go to great lengths to get the just right smoky flavor in a particular dish, but we certainly don't want it in every single one of our dishes. Let's not make this mistake of thinking that all these changes in how we're cooking and what we're cooking with is this constant linear evolution of cooking. It's changing in different ways in different places. So that yes, we might see a raised hearth in one area in 1500 and still being used in the middle of the 20th century, and yet in other places, we'll see a completely different evolution. So it's a very complex change from one cooking method to another. All this innovation in the kitchen, what's happening with our fire and the implements that we use it and the techniques that we can use now that we didn't have before, has completely changed our food culture, what we can eat and how we eat it. As we look into these 18th century cookbooks, we see them trying to cook very, very difficult things, at least in the kitchens that they had. They were trying to emulate these very rich, expensive foods. Today, they seem simplistic. On our cooktop and with our cooking equipment that we have today, they're simple. Isn't it interesting that they did all this cooking in the 18th century when they had the most primitive equipment available? And yet today, with all our complex kitchens, we cook less and less.